Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:50 British Summer Time. Today is October 12th, and today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. If we have a review of what's been happening this week, it has been a rather eventful week in that the S&P closed out the week down about a third of 1% today, and that represents a small breakdown from the 1 month range and greatly increases the possibility that we are in a mean reversion reaction here, and the mean is currently in the region of about 1400. So there isn't a great deal of room for additional consolidation below this range. And the risk of a corrective phase which took out the progression of higher reaction lows occurring at some point in the fourth quarter has been something we've been highlighting for a while, and that does now appear to be in the offing for at least some markets, and among those markets certainly would be Wall Street and the Nasdaq. And in the gold market, gold has been consolidating here, ranging here in below $1,800 for much of the last 3 weeks. It's been unwinding the short-term overbought condition, and the 200-day MA has risen now to approximately $1,655, and that's about $100 away from where the price is right now. Gold remains within this range, and while it was down about $12 in here today, it has significant capacity in which to continue to range or consolidate here and still hold above the 200-day moving average, and provided it continues to hold above that trend mean, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to an eventual upward break and reassertion of the medium-term uptrend. It does look increasingly likely, and certainly the rally that we had for much of August and early September has helped to confirm the view that we're into the accumulation phase of what has been more than a year-long period of consolidation for gold following an accelerated advance last year. In the bond markets, US Treasuries are finishing out the week in positive territory. They're up by 14 ticks in here today, back up towards the 150 area. They've been largely range-bound and unwound much of their overbought condition over the last couple of months. When one looks at US Treasuries on a total return basis, they have one of the most consistent trends there is, and since it's a yield focused crowd that invest in Treasuries, and while they're not getting much of a yield for their efforts right now, the total return index is probably the easiest way to monitor that market, and it remains in this consistent advance. It's still above its 200-day MA. It hasn't sustained a move below the MA in nearly 30 years. So when it does that, then that will be clear confirmation that this bull market is over. But until it does, we need to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we look at the stock market, particularly in Europe, where we haven't had the same deterioration as Wall Street, the FTSE is in the region of 5,800. It's had one of the smaller declines so far. Europe at present is very much in decision-making mode, and I'll speak more about that in a moment, but the stock market is susceptible to an additional pullback, with since Wall Street has been the leading developed market, and the fact that it is in at least a mean reversion right now, it does suggest that there could be some additional pressure put on some of those European markets. And in Asia, the Hang Seng was stronger by 0.2% today. That followed on from an impressive advance yesterday. And it's back above this 21,000 area. It's held this progression of higher reaction lows over the last few months. And the Chinese market on the mainland has bounced back rather well over the last few weeks, and particularly following the Mid-Autumn Festival holiday. And as we approach the change of government, which will start at the end of this month and will run through until next March, provided that continues in a peaceful manner and without the kind of drama that we've had over the last year, then confidence can begin to return to that market, and the likelihood of additional stimulus measures for China from the new administration is really quite high. And we're at a fundamentally cheap area where PE ratios are back to areas from where significant rallies have occurred previously, and the dividend yield is up in excess of 2%, which would say, in a comparative basis, that Chinese equities yield more than the S&P. And in this regard, they are cheap. So while we do not yet have absolute confirmation that the low is in, because we won't really have that until it's broken the progression of lower rally highs, but there are certainly tentative straws in the wind. And as the political uncertainty starts to ebb away with the change of power, then the confidence quotient can start to increase. And that would certainly be a positive for China, and indeed for the wider global economy. We are in a period of time where markets have been very focused on political change. And what we've been concentrating mostly on over the last year, and perhaps even 2 or 3 years, has been the performance of individual companies. And it has been the autonomies in particular which have stood out, because they have been leveraged the growth of the global consumer, and that has been the abiding theme. They dominate the respective niches, they have strong balance sheets, and they are representative of the types of companies that are likely to do well in a global economy which is dependent on, for its growth, on the health of the nascent consumer class, which where we're seeing hundreds of millions of people being lifted out of poverty and into the middle classes. What we've seen in the last month is that politics in Europe, in the USA, and in China, and in India have come center stage. And when you ask anybody what they're really worried about, you'll have some people certainly will be talking about the potential that some companies are going to miss their earnings estimates, and that is a legitimate risk. But estimates are coming from really very high levels, and corporate balance sheets are really very firm indeed. And while we have had some PE ratio expansion following a 4-month rally on stock markets, the majority are not at ridiculously high levels in terms of their PE, and a little bit of a pullback would probably be healthy. Where the majority of people are worried is about the US fiscal cliff. People continue to be worried about how Europe is going to fashion a resolution to this crisis. People remain worried about China, and people were so worried about India that I've met a large number of people who've written it off as a prospect. And when people are expressing that degree of pessimism and uncertainty, then what do they do with their money? And they generally put it into treasuries. And treasuries have held up remarkably well. TIPS in particular are outperforming a number of asset classes, and TIP yields have been contracting steadily, and they're not that far from -1%. And at negative real interest rates, savers are presented with some considerable problems. Because what do you do with your money when it's losing its value by 1% per annum. And that's in government bonds. So you have to go and look at something else. But one of the reasons that caused the credit crisis was that you had a compression of yields in highly rated instruments. So people moved further out the ratings curve and took on additional risks in search of higher yields. And we're in a paradox type situation right now, because it's governments that have the remarkable deficits, and it's governments which don't have a growth strategy. And yet it is government bonds to which people are moving for a safe haven. And that is the cause of this drive into negative real yields. Whereas when one looks at the stock market, well, it's not difficult to see where stock market growth is going to come from. And the autonomy sector in particular is leveraged to the biggest growth story there is at present globally. And it is the company balance sheets that are remarkably firm. And it is the company balance sheets which are being fine-tuned so that they're issuing debt to lock in the lowest cost of capital that has been evident anywhere in generations, and they're buying back their own shares. When a company like Siemens pays 2.4% on its 7 and 8 year bonds and over 4% on its equities, it makes its balance sheet optimization 101 that they're going to sell debt and buy back their equities. So that is going to help put a cushion under the stock market during a reactionary phase. And one of the worries that people have is on the political front rather than on the corporate front, because the corporates are really quite well supported in terms of their fundamentals, although some are a little bit overvalued at present. One of the reasons that people haven't been in the equity market is because of the volatility, and because people have lost faith in the capital preservation abilities of the stock market. And a good part of the reason for that is because of high frequency trading. And just like every other financial innovation, this will almost inevitably get taken to an extreme, and that extreme will cause a crash. And that is a real and present danger to the stock market and indeed to the global economy. And when one thinks about it, over the last 30 and 40 years, and I'm afraid my detailed market history my knowledge of detailed market history doesn't go back very much further than that, but when one thinks about major financial innovation that is heralded as something that is some really worthwhile when it's invented, but tends to get taken to extremes, and then some bright spark says, well, if something is good, a bit more is better, and as much as possible is even better again. And then you get the system crashing. So when index futures were introduced in the 1980s, they were sold as portfolio insurance. Everyone shorted the S&P future at the same time to hedge their risk and cause the 1987 crash. Credit default swaps were heralded as a way of hedging default risk, which had never been possible before. And when people thought that they could all hedge their default risk, then they didn't consider default as a potential problem, even in the slightest, and we got, ran into the credit crisis, where lending conditions had gone to deteriorated to such incredible lows that liar loans were the order of the day, and anyone who wanted money could simply get it because no one expected to have to deal with a bankruptcy ever. And of course, that's we've had this incredible crash. And there are two incredible financial innovations that have happened in the last decade and are being taken to incredible extremes. And the first of those are ETFs. And when ETFs were originally hypothesized, I was still at Bloomberg, and I knew the guys that were helping Barclays to put together the first iShare. And it was seen as a remarkable innovation because it allowed people to invest directly in an index. And it was a basket of shares where the basket was reweighted on a daily basis to literally mimic the stock market index. And QQQ for the NASDAQ 100 was by far the most popular. But what are classed as ETFs, ETCs, and the various notes that are also falling under the exchange, the ETNs, that people tend to mistake for ETFs, that's a sector that has ballooned in the last decade. And it makes reading the prospectus more important than ever, but it has also necessitated that prospectuses are getting increasingly more complicated and beyond the comprehension of anyone but a forensic accountant. So we're getting into a situation where very illiquid assets are being put into very illiquid trading vehicles, and then investors are employing a great deal of leverage on them. And that's the situation which could potentially end in a very ugly manner. But it is more particularly the case because it is in these ETFs that high-frequency traders are becoming increasingly active. And that is something that is really very troubling indeed. Now, we had the flash crash back in 2010, and since then there's been a great deal of navel gazing, but absolutely no action has been taken. And last week there was a flash crash in India. Now, the Nifty index has been heralded globally as one of the most financially innovative and has some of the most up-to-date technology. And of course, that has allowed the same type of situation to develop in India as has been evident in the USA. And what's perhaps most troubling is that this is not a static environment. Because this is a highly liquid environment and a highly profitable environment, there are an increasing number of programming hours being devoted to creating high-frequency trading strategies. And what we're seeing is that bandwidth is continuing to increase and latency is becoming less of a problem, and you're having increasing numbers of trades being put on, increasing number of these funds becoming increasingly active, and what you're seeing is a multiplication and an exponential growth in the number of trades that are occurring. And while that is music to the ears of the exchanges, what is happening is that the modus or the reason for existing for stock markets is for capital creation. And these types of trading activities have absolutely nothing to do with it. It's more of a game or a casino. And it's a casino where there's no house, and anyone who can count cards is allowed in. And what happens is that that is a situation which is going to eventually end in disorder. and it has contributed to a great loss of confidence in the stock market. And that is one of the reasons why people aren't investing in shares. So even though for the first time since the 1950s, the S&P yields more than the US Treasury, and when one looks at high quality equities that are leveraged to global growth, then you can get double the yield on the S&P. And yet people are still not buying them because they're worried. And yet we're seeing these shares breaking out of 10, 12, and 15-year basis. So while there is incredible risk and there is this massive perception that the equity market is never going to be able to break out of this more than decade-long range, we're already seeing that some of the autonomies are completing their basis. And while it might be a number of years before the S&P could be said to be in a new secular bull market, there are an increasing number of the autonomies are in secular bull markets. And that was the focus of my talk in Vermont last week. And I posted the presentation in Comment of the Day on Monday. And I think it'll be up in the presentations section of the website in the next few days. And these equities are an undervalued asset class. So even though they're a little bit overbought in the short term following significant breakouts, any significant pullback is likely to offer a buying opportunity. Because they're leveraged to the type of theme that could create a major bull market. Now, if we address some of the risks that are evident in the global economy, there's going to be a European summit next week. And the big question is what role the European Stability Mechanism is going to have in unburdening governments like Ireland and Spain of their legacy of bank debt. And there's every likelihood that the solution is going to look something like an FDIC. And for those that are not familiar with that, it's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation in the USA that manages the bankruptcy of banks. And that is something that Europe badly needs because no bank has been allowed to go bankrupt. And it is a ridiculous situation that a financial sector has to weigh so heavily on the sovereign without some of the debts being written off. And once an FDIC type organization has been set up, then there is the possibility that some of these banks can be run down and that a proper solution can be found for the debt issue. When one thinks about Europe, no one has benefited more from the euro than Germany. There is no politician in Germany that would countenance leaving the euro. And if you look at just about any party in any of the eurozone countries, then find one that says it would leave the euro if it gets into power. And you're unlikely to find one that has any prayer of ever getting into power. And that makes talk of a eurozone breakup rather difficult, because for it to occur, you would need a government that was willing to countenance it. And no government, and there are almost no parties that have a credible possibility of attaining a majority that can actually use that as in their campaign rhetoric. And the only one that came close was in Greece. When we look at China, there has been a great deal of drama about the government decennial change, but it's likely to be peaceful, and when it happens, we're likely to get some stimulus. India has been largely written off, but we've seen some incredible changes politically in the last few weeks, and the fact that the reforms that were put on hold last year have been pushed through. So there's going to be liberalization of the retail sector. And that is interesting, because what India probably needs more than anything else is supply chain management. And that is the kind of thing that a company like Walmart or Costco or Carrefour or Metro Age or Tesco can bring. And what India needs more than anything else is to be able to escape the monsoon. It rains in other countries, and living in Ireland, we know all about that. But India's monsoon is both a blessing and a curse. And the lack of a supply chain, the lack of refrigeration, the lack of proper warehousing means that much of the crop goes to waste. And the fact that you have these massive bureaucracy between the producer and the end consumer inflates prices, puts upward pressure on inflationary measures in the country. So liberalizing the supermarket sector is probably the single most important thing for the country in terms of getting down the inflation. And it's to be welcomed. And the fact that the government has announced some very important initiatives is very welcome indeed. So while in the very short term there is this uncertainty following the flash crash last week, there is the potential for additional upside over the medium term, because the background economic environment is that bit more encouraging. The fiscal cliff is probably the biggest problem outstanding for the USA. The USA has got a considerable number of positive attributes, not least that it has a clear advantage in energy, that the recession has contributed to an improvement in competitiveness, and that we're seeing the cost of labor come down. And the consumer has deleveraged. Now, that has been paid for by the government leveraging up, but the consumer has deleveraged to at least a certain extent. And the thing that has people most worried is about is the deterioration in governance, but also the fiscal cliff, and the fact that the future liabilities far outweigh the ability to pay in the current environment. And if one thinks about what the definition of impossible is, it means that it can't happen. And there isn't a prayer that Medicare is going to go forward in its current situation without some form of change. And that is either going to be on the income side, where there's going to have to be additional taxes or possibly a VAT or a GST consumption tax, or there's going to have to be a change to the entitlement structure, and potentially both. But something is going to happen, and the shape that it takes is likely to have a profound effect on the perceptions of what's going to happen with the US. And it is interesting that the stock market has been going through a 12-year consolidation. And these things tend to run for about 15 years and sometimes maybe a little bit longer. And what happens in terms of the choices for the fiscal cliff are likely to have quite a significant impact on the ability of Wall Street to perform. So it really is a big decision, and whoever wins the election next month is going to have to deal with it. So we're presented with an environment where there are ample opportunities. And when we look at the trends that are in evidence. U.S. treasuries represent, and not just U.S. treasuries, but gilts and bunds and JGBs as well, represent the last big bubble that is yet to pop. But as long as we don't have any confirming evidence, the upside is to be given the benefit of the doubt. Not least because governments continue to print with abandon. And that's the reason we have negative real interest rates. And from the perspective of someone who looks at the world in terms of debits and credits, then every asset is a liability. And likewise, every liability is somebody's asset. But when one looks at purchasing power, then that gives you a different perspective on the global economy. And while gold has no yield and is therefore difficult to value on a dividend discount basis, it does have value and it is nobody's liability. And because of that, it has continued to attract interest. It's put in a positive performance for each of the last 12 years. And more importantly, perhaps, it posted breakouts to new recovery highs and now new all-time highs. But that happened in 2001, 2003, 2005, 2007, and 2009. And since 2009, we've had breakouts in 2009, 10, and 11. And gold is currently in the region of $1,760, and the peak is at $1,911. So it's $150 away from its peak. And we're less than 3 months from the end of the year. If what has been an incredible consistency in the last 3 years is going to be sustained, then we'll see a new high for gold this year. And the fact that we've gone from every second year to consecutive years would suggest that the pace of the advance is picking up. So gold represents an incredible bull market, and it's a bull market where increasing numbers of people are getting the message. And there is every chance that gold will eventually peak in a mania, which would be represented by an incredible acceleration higher. But there's no evidence of it just yet. And in the very short term, there is the possibility that we're going to see a further consolidation in gold as this mean reversion persists. But once the mean reversion has run its course, the chances are that we are going to see new highs in gold, and significant new highs. And with that, I think I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.